Good afternoon. I'm going to call this meeting of the House Housing Finance and Policy Committee to order. And I will note a quorum is present. First order of business is to approve the minutes. Vice Chair Agbaje, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
There's just one thing I wanted to check. I review the minutes and they are correct. I move them.
Thank you, Vice Chair Agbaje. All those in favor of approving the minutes say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those say no. Minutes are approved. Members, today we have Commissioner Ho available to present the governor's housing finance budget and a bill after that as well. But up first, we have the commissioner, and I'll welcome Commissioner Ho back to the committee.
Chair Howard, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Ho and I'm the Commissioner of Minnesota Housing, and it is my great honor to be able to walk through the Governor's and Lieutenant Governor's budget proposal today. I think what I would preface before I jump into the slides by saying is that with this surplus and this opportunity, we have the opportunity to invest across the full continuum of housing needs, everything from preventing and ending homelessness to closing the homeownership gap. And so I hope that you see in our budget proposal are doing that. Housing has always been a place where one-time money can be used. And so you'll see a lot of one-time funds, especially in our production programs, where we're doing the creation of new housing or preservation of housing. But there are some things that we do that require ongoing funding. So you'll also see in our budget proposal that places where it's not one and done, but that you have to kind of sustain something over time, that we've been able to build that into the forecasts or the tails. The other thing I'll just say in preface to my remarks is that at the agency we've thought a lot about what it takes to put money in these amounts to work, and what are the things that we can do to get the money working as quickly as we can, because we know the housing needs of Minnesotans are urgent and now. And so you will see that we have a bias towards existing line items where we are able to, but also that we will introduce new programs where we know that there are holes in terms of what our funding allows us to do. So that's just kind of the preface, and I hope you see that throughout. And I should say I'm here with Dan. I am. So as I said, you know, having something that reaches every corner of the state, something that can help us deal with the fact that so many households are paying more than they can afford. We can do, this is an and budget. Rental and home ownership, new construction and preservation, deeply affordable housing and market rate housing, especially in greater Minnesota, homelessness prevention and home ownership development, rental assistance and down payment assistance. So this is a budget with a lot of and. I'll start by saying, you know, we know that the challenge of being able to pay for housing, having a home in the community where your kids go to school or where you want to work, that's a challenge, and it's a challenge all over the state. The federal standard has always been that people should not have to pay more than 30% of their income on their housing, unless, of course, you choose to. You can always buy up. But we've got almost 600,000 Minnesota households that are paying more than 30% of their income for housing. Almost 80% of extremely low-income Minnesota renters are cost-burdened, which means that they pay more than they can afford for their rent. We've got 184,000 households that are in prime home-buying age bracket of 25 to 44. I was trying to remember when I bought my home. I think I was in there. That have enough income to pay a mortgage, but they may not have the cash needed to be able to do down payment and closing costs. We also know we have a limited supply of single-family homes for sale, especially homes at $250,000 or less. And, you know, 8,000 people who face homelessness on any given night. So let's take a look at the top line. Our base budget for 24-25 coming into this session is $115.6 million. We are proposing to add $726.5 million to the 24-25 base for a total of $842.1 million. In addition, as we look forward to the 26-27 planning estimates, this budget proposes $41.5 million. In addition to the appropriated items, we also have in the governor's bonding bill capital investment recommendations, including public housing rehabilitation, general obligation bonds, $60 million, and housing infrastructure bonds, which are appropriation bonds, of $250 million. And I'll now walk through those kind of by category. I am, you know, my motto has been go big so everyone can go home. So you'll hear that from me. This is the go big budget. And we think of our budget as being in these four categories. How do we preserve and create new homes? What do we do to increase housing stability? How do we support and strengthen home ownership? And how do we build and support organizational capacity? So if you take a look at our budget by these categories, you'll see the total amount for preserve and create is $473.8 million, an increase of $420 million. So again, this is where it is easy to invest a large amount of one-time funds. And then this is also where our bonding requests come into play. In increasing housing stability, you'll see an increase of $165 million over base to $221 million. Supporting and strengthening home ownership is an increase of $130 million. Which is up from $4.5 million, so a significant increase there. And then building and supporting organizational capacity, I'll talk about that a little bit more, but $11.5 million in that line item. And Chair Howard, it's completely your call, but I'm happy to take questions as we go or wait till the end, however people want to do it. So.
Commissioner, how about we go through the presentation? If a member has a really burning question on point, just try to look my way and we'll stop. But why don't we proceed and do questions after we get through the presentations?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. So here's the breakout of the line items that are inside Preserve and Create New Homes. And what you'll see is where we have a new line item, a new budget proposal, but we have flagged it as new. And if you notice on the bottom three line items, there isn't a plus. So those are the three line items in Preserve and Create from our budget where we're not proposing to add new funds. But in the rest of them, you'll see them broken out. So Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program, we're proposing $100 million in one-time funding. This is our most flexible funding tool, which allows us to be very responsive to the needs of communities every year in our consolidated funding process. So we can do preservation, we can do new production, we can do rental, we can do single family homes. So this allows us to really say whatever is coming in the door in any given year, we have some money to be able to say yes and fill gaps and mix and match to be able to make as many projects as we can happen from what comes in the door. So I think it's a great place to have a huge one-time infusion in funding. So that's the challenge program. The workforce home ownership program, actually I'm going to go through each of these in detail. So maybe what I'll do is just let's flip to the next slide, Dan. So yeah, that's the challenge program. And I guess the other thing I want to just point out here is that we've kind of used our historical investments to estimate how many housing opportunities an investment of the magnitude for each line item would create. So the $100 million in the challenge program, we think, could add 1,200 new housing opportunities or a combination of preservation and new construction. These are largely zero interest deferred loans or grants. They go to for-profits, nonprofits, local governments. This is just really a terrific program. I and I think one that the agency has really been able to demonstrate year to year helps communities get built what they have prioritized. The Workforce and Affordable Home Ownership Program, this is to create more single-family housing and home ownership opportunities. Again, grants to cities, tribes, nonprofits, cooperatives, community land trusts, all for the creation of new housing. It can be used for development costs, rehab, land development, manufactured home park infrastructure. The base funding today is just $250,000 a year. We're proposing adding $35 million for the biennium. And based on historic amounts, it would be over 500 homes that we could create through the Workforce and Affordable Home Ownership Program. A new line item, and one I know that the chair is familiar with from our conversations in previous sessions, is our community stabilization line item. This is really how we would begin to work, the agency doesn't today, work with lower-end rental properties, lower-rent properties that don't have any government assistance in them, in order to make sure that they aren't sold, upgraded, and the price that rent goes up so much that the people who live there can't stay there. This is kind of the naturally occurring affordable housing in communities across the state, and if we don't figure out how to keep more of it affordable, we're actually kind of bleeding as we're trying to build more stuff to replace it. So we think that this is a very important role for the agency to play and are looking for $100 million. We don't have history to base our estimates on, but our projected impact would be 2,000 homes preserved. The Greater Minnesota Workforce Housing Program, I have this program also just brings a smile to my face because it's allowed me to go to War Road and Thief River Falls and Roseau and communities all across the state where they have a great employer who wants to hire more employees, but they don't have a place for people to live. And so this is really allowing us to put up rental housing for workers in some of the smaller communities across the state. We actually just kind of bring enough money to these deals to make them pencil out for the developers. It's a little bit less efficient to do a smaller rental property in a small town. So this creates incentives for folks like Skip DeShano at D.W. Jones to be able to come in and make a deal work. So we're proposing adding $40 million to this program, 1,140 new homes. And then housing infrastructure is something that historically we have done through appropriation bonds. And we're proposing this year to do this both with appropriations as well as bonding. So $100 million from the appropriation side of the budget and $250 million in the governor's bonding proposal. I mean, this is really the tool that allows us to do deeply affordable housing. It was originally created kind of appreciating that geo bonds have to go to public entities, and a lot of our developers of housing are for-profit and nonprofit developers across the state. It has allowed Minnesota to do a lot of permanent supportive housing, which is really the proven intervention for breaking the cycle of chronic homelessness. It helps us with preservation. We do senior housing now with it. We've done some single family homes, especially on land trust land, manufactured home park infrastructure. This is really one of those Minnesota inventions that's been wildly successful in terms of being able to do units that are very affordable to low income families and individuals. So as I mentioned, the $100 million on the budget side and then $250 million in bonds. There are a couple of new uses, but they were among the uses that I mentioned on the previous page. I think I've been getting ahead of myself this whole slide deck, Dan. These housing infrastructure bonds have been around since 2012. And And again, you know, I think really it kind of aligns with the fact that we're really starting to understand that housing is infrastructure for having a healthy community and a healthy state. We are proposing a new use in the housing infrastructure bonds in 2023. We do permanent supportive housing, but this would allow us to do housing for folks who make 50% of the area median income or below, who don't need the supportive services. They're just lower income, and they need a place that they can afford. So we're pleased to once again introduce this idea of expanding the use for units for people who are just making 50% of AMI. And I just want to highlight a project that uses housing infrastructure bonds. We just made selections in 2022, December. And even though we didn't get new housing infrastructure bonds, we did have a little bit remaining housing infrastructure bonds. So we were able to select this supportive housing project that was brought to us by Red Lake. So construction will begin this year. 28 units of supportive housing as twin homes and duplexes, 1 to 3 bedroom units. That's located near some service centers so that the people who live in the housing will be able to benefit with some extra support, the tools that they need to not only succeed in housing, but to make progress on other goals as well. We're doing the same thing with public housing preservation as we're proposing to do with housing infrastructure. There's both appropriated dollars in the governor's proposal for this, as well as geo-bonding in the bonding bill. So these are loans to public housing authorities, largely to address some basic health and safety issues associated with these properties. You find public housing all over the state, and a lot of it is housing that is pretty old. So we're proposing $20 million in cash and $60 million in bonding, estimated about 1,670 units just on the appropriated side, and then I guess you could say easily three times that on the bonding side. I take me to the next slide, Dan. I'll just remind folks that the state started doing this all the way back in 2005. This is really in recognition of the fact that HUD has not fulfilled its obligation to its built public housing, and so there's a lot of deferred maintenance in these buildings. And these are a critical part of the, affordable rental marketplace in many of our communities, and it's these 30,000 units are so important to our housing kind of landscape that we really have felt that we can't let them fall out of repair or be an unsafe place for people to live. We award these statewide on a competitive basis, and we do things like fire suppression and things like that. Let me show you an example from Alexandria. This is a Viking Tower. It was a $2 million deal from 2018. This was built in 1969, so to give you a sense of its age. It's almost as old as me. 106 one-bedroom units from the Alexandria Housing and Redevelopment Authority. I don't know how well you can see the picture in the bottom, but that was the old, I don't know what you call it, boiler room, utility room, mechanical room. That's the old one, and it had some serious problems. Before and after, here's the after shot. It had serious water leaks. There were problems with the HVAC system around temperature control, as well as ventilation challenges for the units. So you can see that just making sure that the guts of the building are working right can be a health and safety a benefit for the residents there. We're also proposing in the budget $25 million get added for manufactured home park infrastructure. This is a newer area of work for the legislature and Minnesota Housing to be doing together. In our most recent RFP selections from December of 2022, we put out $9.5 million to improve 742 lots. This, too, is just really basic stuff. This is water, this is sewer, this is electrical. This is roads and sidewalks, real critical infrastructure that benefits all the residents of a manufactured home community. And we estimate that $25 million, we could increase our impact by 1,920 units of housing. I'm going to switch to the topic of increasing housing stability. And here we have our programs that are probably most targeted to preventing or ending homelessness. Let me go over the ones, well, let's go through them line by line, but what you'll see here when you see our budget is this is an area where we also have tails in our forecast, because many of these programs are ongoing rental assistance or something like that. They're not, that can't be done one and done. So family homeless prevention and assistance program. The best, the way to handle homelessness is to prevent it before it begins. But if somebody does experience homelessness, the second best thing is to get them back into housing as quickly as we're able. Family Homeless Prevention Assistance Program has allowed us to do that. We're requesting a significant increase of $100 million in the current, or in the 24-25 biennium, with an $8.5 million increase in the tails. We think that this would be responsive to what we've seen really since the evictions protections ended last June. We've seen an increase in evictions filings. Evictions filings are above pre-pandemic level, and it wasn't just a spike. They've stayed there. And so this is, you know, we think our best tool for being able to get direct assistance out to families to prevent or quickly resolve homelessness and help take some of the pressure off of landlords as well, because that tends to be money that gets paid to them. With $100 million, we think we could help over 40,000 households. The Housing Trust Fund is the agency's rental assistance program. These are grants to local organizations to provide rental assistance so that people only pay 30% of their income for rent. Not dissimilar to the way a HUD housing choice voucher works. Nearly 75% of the people that we serve with this program have experienced long-term homelessness, and this housing assistance allows them to be stably housed. We're proposing a $10 million increase to the base of this, both this biennium and going forward, at about $9,000 per household per year. We think we could serve over 500 households additionally with this program. A new proposal that we're bringing back from last year as well is something we're calling strengthening the supportive housing model. So supportive housing is that magic of bringing together housing and supports so that people who have had long histories of homelessness have a home they can afford, but also have the support that they need to be able to thrive in that housing. And it really is a nationally demonstrated best practice around both ending homelessness, but also a much more cost-effective use of public resources when we can get such positive outcomes for people. But we've never really, even though we've been funding it from a capital perspective for a long time, and we've put operating money in through the Housing Trust Fund in the past, we have never kind of solved the magic that it costs more to run supportive housing than it costs to do just rental housing because of the additional supports. This is a conversation Commissioner Harpstead and I have been having about the importance of making sure that there is a adequate and reliable and sustainable service funding connection for supportive housing. I am proposing $40 million of one-time money be used in order to help us strengthen our network of supportive housing providers, because the economics of it are in danger of creating a disincentive for the creation of more. And we know that this is the solution to homelessness, including people with very long and complex histories of homelessness. So this would be a new program, and estimating about 5,000 units of supportive housing and the people who live there could be affected with that. Homework Starts with Home is a great program that really helps foster collaborations between housers, housing navigators, and schools to help kids that are homeless or highly mobile in our schools get assistance for the family to be stably housed. We do this through grants to local organizations, both local government and nonprofits, and it's really, I think, a terrific program. We're proposing adding $5 million to that in both biennia, and we could increase the number of families that were assisted by over 350 a year. The Bridges program is another rental assistance program that the program operates that was designed specifically for people with a serious mental illness who were on a waiting list for a HUD housing choice voucher. We're proposing increasing this by $10 million in both biennia in order to help over 100 households be added to that. This is really targeted work that we're able to engage with around making sure that people who have had a mental health hospitalization aren't discharged into homelessness. It's a tool that could help us with people who are transitioning out of institutional care or to help people who have a mental illness and are living on the street. We've been running this program for quite some time. It really does an incredible job of promoting housing stability for people with mental illness. And then the last category that I want to walk through, I guess there's two more categories, is strengthening this home ownership. The agency does, we did over 5,000 first-time home buyer mortgages through our network of lenders last year. The vast majority of the people who come to us for a first-time home buyer mortgage also receive down payment and closing cost assistance from us. The legislature used to fund this in a bigger way. That has been cut down to under $2 million. We are proposing that this is a good time for an infusion of down payment assistance. We're proposing $128 million. We're at a moment in time. Why don't you flip the slide to the next one, Dan? And we're at a time where between the price of a home and the interest rates, there's just more headwinds for home buyers. And we know that down payment and closing cost assistance has been a very effective tool to help first-time home buyers in. And the agency actually reached our goal of having our lending go to 40% households of color and indigenous households. We got there a year earlier than we had planned. We hit that last year. So the combination of down payment and closing cost assistance with the agency's lending tools has been a proven tool for helping begin to narrow the home ownership gap in Minnesota. So the estimate, the $128 million, we could help 6,400 households. And then home ownership education, counseling, and training. This is for folks who maybe their parents didn't own a home. Maybe the whole idea of buying a home is either mysterious or scary. This is a way to kind of unpack the home buying process, also to just kind of understand, like, what do you need to do to buy a home and help get people ready for that. It's been a wildly effective program. Again, it's just a small appropriation from the state today, but we're proposing to add $2 million to it in the 24-25 biennium. And this is a partnership between us and the Minnesota Home Ownership Center. It's really fantastic work, and I mean a huge return. It really comes out to be like $220 per household helped. But in terms of helping people weigh whether they want to be home buyers, I think it's just a great tool. And then the last category is building and supporting organizational capacity. The last 3 years have taken a toll on our partners. I think that when we think about the possibility of being able to end the session with $1 billion or more for housing, I think we really need to make sure that the people across Minnesota who do this work have the capacity to be able to take this on. So we're proposing $11.5 million to our capacity building line item. This funds some of the infrastructure that's needed to move money. For example, HUD's continuum of cares are just the name HUD uses for the way the regions in the state for how they put out HUD homeless assistance money. We've used it to help fund the homeless management information system, which creates good data around the impact of our programs targeting ending homelessness. We fund HomeLine. But we think that there could be kind of a large range of capacity needs just because of what our nonprofit partners and others have kind of borne over the course of the last few years. I think that's it for the prepared part. I always want to remind you, if you have a hard question, call Dan. And there's his information. But looking forward to having an opportunity to come and sit and meet with you all as well. And so, Chair Howard, happy to take any and all questions.
Thank you, Commissioner, and I'll open up for questions. But first, just wanted to make a few comments and thank you and thank the governor for proposing a budget that invests, as you said, across the continuum of the housing needs in a yes and mode, which we need to be in to address our housing crisis. To prepare a budget that is proposing more money than any governor's proposed in housing is an important step. I guess my first question, just that I'll fire off the first one. I'm thinking about our first hearing when we saw sort of the slide from Ms. Mavity and Mavity's presentation about how precipitously the production of housing has dropped off and how we need to get ourselves on a trend line well into the future to build the homes we need. And I'm just wondering if you have thoughts on how this budget connects with that in terms of the production we need to make now. And then along with that, of the program, just to comment on, there's a lot of one-time resources in this budget. Comment on whether there you see a need or where there will be a need beyond one-time dollars into the future as we think about that trend line.
Chair Howard, thanks for the question. You know, we were kind of getting on track to the production levels that we needed, and then the disruption to construction that came with the pandemic and inflation and you know, supply chain issues and lumber costs and everything like that, I think set us back a little bit. What I love about this budget proposal is that it signals to the development community and to cities across the state, like, now is a time to plan ahead, right? If you weren't planning on putting a proposal into Minnesota housing this summer, you really should think about it. In fact, you might even think about doing two. And if you weren't, you know, and if you're thinking about doing one this year but not one next year, you should be thinking about doing one next year too. In fact, maybe next year you might do two. That there is enough of an investment here to signal to the development community that that the pipeline is big enough to carry people's proposals. What the agency saw last year is our proposals are due after session is over, and we had a lot of folks say to us in the spring, we plan on putting in a proposal, that didn't bother putting a proposal in the summer because we didn't get new housing infrastructure bonds. And if they wanted to do a senior housing project, for example, and there were no new housing infrastructure bonds, they just felt it's going to be too competitive for us to get there. I think the legislature is signaling that we want to do a lot of production. I mean, I'll be honest, I can't spend all of this in 1 year. But over the course of two or 3 years, we can. So that gets our pipeline bigger. And I think that if the February forecasts are more generous in the tails, you know, it'd be an opportunity to consider whether there's other ways to signal what's available in the, you know, in the future. So if I were a developer or if I were a city that was thinking about a project, I mean, I would be sharpening, I guess we don't do it on paper anymore. I wouldn't be sharpening my pencil. I would be turning on my computer and getting ready to do it. And if I had one for sure and one in mind, I would be trying to figure out if I could get that second one that's just a thought to a little bit more clarity and get it ready to go, because this signals that instead of saying no to 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 5 projects that come through the door, you know, I might be able to say yes to 80% of what comes through. And that is very exciting to me in terms of the message that we would be sending about needing to get production up and keep it up. But I also think, if I may, things like strengthening the supportive housing model also send a signal to the nonprofits that have been willing to do this, even though it is very hard to break even on it, that we understand that too, and that we're going to help them solve their problems so that they can continue to produce going into the future. So I think it really reflects not just what the agency thinks is important, but it also reflects what we're hearing from our partners in terms of what they need to be able to go big.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. That thought of that pipeline, I think, is really important for our committee and for our thinking, to because it has been sort of starved. We went to a session where we did almost nothing. And I'll just remind folks of analogy I've been using about our housing finance agency budget, that if our entire state budget was a 1 gallon jug of water, we spend less than a tablespoon of those dollars in terms of general fund dollars for the housing finance agency. And so we have a big opportunity here. And I do think we need to be mindful of the opportunity with the one-time dollars, but knowing that we're facing a multi-year path to truly meet our needs. And so I think that's for us to wrestle with as we start to do our work to build a budget as well. Other questions for members? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You knew it would be there. Commissioner, thanks for being here. I wanted to make sure that I heard something correctly in your presentation. Did you say that the state has purchased homes and then turned them into stable renting opportunities for people to help them get into a home?
Commissioner Hope.
I heard that correctly.
Chair Howard and Representative Nash, I don't think I said that. So if I said something that sounded like that, okay. We don't do that. So try to figure out what it was that I did say.
Okay.
Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And along those same lines, do you and by extension the administration think that placing restrictions on entities that may come in and want to buy homes to then turn into a rental facility, do you think that that's an activity that should be prohibited?
Commissioner Ho.
Chair Howard and Representative Nash. We're certainly aware nationally that corporate purchases of single-family homes so that they go from being owner-occupied to being rental housing is a trend. I think there's a general speculation that property management was something that originally was viewed too hard to do in the single-family market because it's so dispersed, but that some national property management companies have figured out to do it so the investors are seeing single-family rental as a new area. I know it's an area where there will be discussion, I suspect, at the legislature. There was some discussion about it last session as well. We have not proposed any language we're not proposing any language related to that this session.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, here in this committee yesterday, we heard a bill that would disallow even a small LLC of 5 members or less from being able to purchase homes and then turn them into stable, well-run rental facilities. And would appreciate, and since you said I can ask Dan the hard questions, maybe we throw that. No, I won't do that.
And I'm here, I usually.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to get a sense of where the administration is on a proposal like that that I think many would consider pretty aggressive. We can forward you the bill number, but it did say that an LLC or a corporation that had no more than 5 members or a not-for-profit would be prevented from doing so, and that if they did have those, that they could either be sued by the Attorney General or forced to sell those homes at an auction. And I'm just trying to gauge the administration's perspective on that, and if you could help us out with that.
I don't know if that was a follow-up question, Representative Nash. We did have that discussion yesterday, but Commissioner Ho.
Hi, Chair Howard, Representative Nash. I'd be happy to read the bill language. I haven't read the bill.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you. And Commissioner, we've spoken a little bit offline, and I guess my question is you gave an indication that the you and the governor were looking at this as an kind of an all-of-the-above approach, or as I call it, the quadratic equation approach to how do we fix the housing issue. Do you agree that some statutory reforms on zoning and other things are required, like Ms. Mavity testified, I think, on the same day that you were here? Do you believe that?
Commissioner Ho.
Chair Howard and Representative Nash, the governor's office doesn't have a policy position on that.
Okay. Right. Representative Nash.
I'm good.
Representative Fasan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here and for walking through this. This is the first time that I am very proud of the governor spending this much money on housing. I've been here 4 years. This is my fifth year, and I think this is the largest budget of housing I have seen. And I'm very happy, but I have some questions. Home ownership. I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I talk about home ownership all the time, that it is, we are one of the worst states between, you know, home ownership between whites and non-whites. And we know, you know, all the benefits of home ownership. It's generational wealth. It stabilizes neighborhoods and families. I see that in this proposal, you guys are spending a lot of money on down payment assistance and home ownership education, counseling, and training, which is all good. But I don't see any money being spent on, like, supporting some of the nonprofits that want to build new homes, because we have heard in this committee and in the last few years that there is a inventory issue. We don't have enough homes that are affordable for the people that want to buy. There are 60,000 families who are mortgage ready, who are from the BIPOC community, who can purchase a home today, but don't, like, there aren't units available for them. So I just would like to just maybe get a little bit talk about where are we at inventory, and spending $129 million on down payment assistance sounds a great idea, but if there are no homes to purchase, then this money, can we use some of this money for new construction or funding, or you know, using it for nonprofits who are doing that work? Thank you.
Commissioner Ho.
Chair Howard and Representative Hassan, thank you for that. So Dan has brought up the production side of the budget. Debt challenge program builds houses. The workforce home ownership program builds houses. So I think that it's just, and the housing infrastructure bond program can build houses. There are, in our production programs, line items that can help nonprofits build single family homes. And then oftentimes they can do that, you know, in combination with a down payment assistance to the family for them to be able to get in there. So in our production programs, we will increase the agency's ability to fund nonprofits who want to build single family homes.
Representative Fasan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, some of the nonprofits that I've worked with in the past don't like HIPS. It's harder to use, and there's a lot of complications. But while we're on this subject, can the agency at least plan? I don't want to say promise, because I don't want you to promise anything that you can't keep. Can you guys plan on at least spending significant amount of money from the HIPS program on production of new units?
Commissioner Ho.
Chair Howard and Representative Hassan. Yes. First, let me just acknowledge housing infrastructure bonds were created predominantly to do rental housing, where the builder is the long-term owner. And so when the legislature decided to set aside part of the housing infrastructure bonds for single-family production, it was a little bit of an awkward match, because the nonprofits who build the housing then sell the home, but they still have the long-term obligation of the debt on their books. We believe that that could be fixed with some technical changes to the language of the housing infrastructure bonds that would allow them to be used for grants. We think that using some appropriated dollars for housing infrastructure would disentangle it from the appropriation bond obligations. I'll just say one more time, it's also why we like challenge. Because challenge is much easier money for agencies to do. It's just less complicated than a bond deal.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for being here and helping us try to understand all of this too. This does look like a large investment into housing, but one of the things that I'm always looking for, kind of the alternative of either spending more money or dealing with increased pricing, because I don't see anything here in this budget that actually reduces the cost of building housing. We deal with the after the fact, and the problem that I've seen in my 10 years here at the legislature is that oftentimes government programs that are used to help subsidize the price of a particular product or service that we do is sometimes indirectly the cause of the increased cost of providing it as well. It's kind of a catch-22. Are there, and I don't know how to do that because that's a tough nut to crack, but do we have any programs that is actually there to help reduce the cost of building the homes? Because if we just keep increasing the cost and it's still not affordable, and the only way for people to actually get into them is through additional government dollars, that's not really helpful long term, at least in my opinion. So I'm just wondering if there is anything in this budget or any ideas on how we can do something to help reduce the actual cost of building houses.
Commissioner Ho.
Chair Howard and Representative Petersburg, thanks for the question. One of the things that actually surprised me when I took this job is when you take a look at the history of the agency's investment in housing, it has actually stayed pretty flat. That we're able actually to contain costs because we're running a competition for resources that values cost efficiency, cost containment in the development process. So while the broader private housing market might have costs that are going up, our investments in housing at the agency have not had a commensurate increase in terms of what we've needed to put into these things. So I think just the fact that there is an incentive for projects to, I'll say sharpen the pencil again, kick me if I say it a third time, but to make sure, and then also when we're working with developers on a deal, we have staff who have expertise in looking at these deals for many, many years, who can also make suggestions that can help around cost containment. So cost containment is absolutely a goal of the agency. I think just the fact that we run a competition that looks carefully at cost is one of the ways that we've been able to be effective at it. And I mean, remember, for a lot of our programs, if you're coming to our money, you're already agreeing to operate within certain rent parameters because you are accepting government assistance to do the work.
Paul, President Petersburg.
Yeah, just thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, I understand that, and I'm not talking about whether or not the agency has been able to maintain their and controls and so forth. But I would argue that the request and the need for this indicates that where you've been able to contain whatever it is you've been contained, we've been falling backwards in trying to actually provide more housing and better. What I'm really referring to is the bureaucracy and other things that may or may not be outside of the control of the housing department and your agency, but are still government intervention in the cost of building houses and housing, because it's not just houses. There's also rental units, there are duplexes and other things that are also valid homes for people to live in. And I'm just concerned that we continue to figure out how we can use more taxpayer dollars to subsidize the pricing while we're still implementing additional programs and policies that actually increase the cost. And so basically we're taking more to pay more without necessarily improving the cost. And I don't know that I have the answer either. I was just curious if you had talked about that and thought about it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for being here. I'm really pleased to see the significant investment in manufactured housing included in here. I'm looking at the spreadsheet here, and I had a question up on line four. There's the manufactured home community redevelopment program for $27 million in the biennium. And then down on line 37, there's a manufactured home park preservation line item with $25 million there for the biennium. Are those different programs, or is that showing just the same program and it's the difference in the base compared to what you're proposing?
Commissioner Ho.
Chair Howard and Representative Norris, I do not have the benefit of looking at the same spreadsheet that you're looking at right now. I'd be happy to take a look at it. I'm at a loss on my numbers.
I might go to Mr. Herney here with House Research.
Yeah, Chair Howard, Representative Norris, the base for manufactured home community development is $2 million in the upcoming biennium. The change item total on line 37 is $25 million. What you're looking at in the governor's column is adding the base to the change item together. That gets you $27
million. Representative Norris, is that?
Right. Yeah, so if I'm understanding it correctly, there's one program being funded. It's just being shown twice in two different ways on the spreadsheet. Perfect. And then if I can, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Norris.
The other thing I was really pleased to see in here is the capacity building grants. Having worked in the nonprofit sector during the pandemic in an organization that was kind of on the front lines of responding, we had a lot of dollars come our way, which was a great thing, but it's very taxing on the people and the systems working in those organizations. And if we want to make sure that they're able to maximize these dollars that are coming their way, I think it's a really smart and prudent investment to also put aside a little money to make sure that they're able to build up the capacity to do the work. So I'm glad to see that.
Representative Dotson.
Thank you, Chair Howard and Commissioner. Maybe this may not be the proper format, but I guess a question I would have is a lot of you are aware, I'm actually from Greater Minnesota. And in Greater Minnesota, we have a lot of small communities with failing infrastructure as far as holding systems, as far as the sewer systems in the small communities are failing. Have we looked at this where it's not strictly focused towards publicly owned housing and it's going more towards helping assist some of these small communities? Where would that fall in place here?
Commissioner Ho.
Does that make sense?
Chair Howard and Representative, I do believe the question makes sense. Traditionally, the agency hasn't funded community infrastructure outside of the confines of a specific housing development. It just hasn't been a charge to the agency.
Representative Dotseth.
Thank you, Madam Chair, or Commissioner. With that said, how about encouraging maybe infrastructure in new developments in some of these small communities? I guess I have experience where some of them do not have the capacity to expand their sewer capacity or take on additional housing. Is there, maybe I'm looking at this incorrectly, but are there some options that we can look at that could assist them?
Commissioner Ho.
Chair Howard and Representative Dasseth, that is a conversation that has been brought to us by some of the advocates, and we're in a conversation with the Department of Employment and Economic Development about where best a proposal like that would sit.
Representative Dotseth.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I would just say, Representative Dotseth, I think you bring up interesting intersections with housing. I mean, there's a lot of intersections with capital investment work that we need to do, and the more we can kind of get out of our silos and housing and view this as the intersections make sense. I just appreciate the question. Representative Igbaje, Vice Chair Igbaje.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Thank you, Commissioner, for being here. It's always good to see you. I just wanted to kind of lift up a little bit the public housing rehab section of the budget. So in the housing section of it, you have $20 million, and I understand that in the capital investment budget, there'll be another $60 million, so a total of $80 million, if that's correct. Okay. So I think that that's great. I think we need to do as much as we can to really support public housing needs, especially because we know that so many of the places where a lot of our low-income residents and vulnerable residents are living are, you know, not always up to par. And so I really appreciate that the governor's budget is putting some significant investment there. As we move forward, though, I guess I'm interested in knowing kind of the plan for that, if they like what the capacity looks like within the agency to continue to work in this space, and then also is the plan then to kind of address the buildings and the public housing units that need the most work first, or have you thought that far yet?
Commissioner Ho.
Chair Howard and Representative Evijay, Definitely. This is an area where we asked for $60 million had there been a bonding bill last year, so we were already thinking about making sure that we had agency capacity to do it. When there have been smaller geobond amounts in the past, it kind of limited what we could do to smaller projects. But I think with a larger amount, we could do a combination of smaller and larger projects. I had the opportunity to tour the Hiawatha Towers and see the installation of a fire suppression system there. We used POP funding to contribute to the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority getting fire suppression across their portfolio. They're not done yet, but they've raised all the money, which is exciting. So I think we always take a look at critical preservation projects. That gets a higher priority if there's health and safety considerations. We would do that over, for example, landscaping. But when you can do a project where you're able to deal with both kind of the critical health and safety stuff, but also do a facelift at the same time, that can be a real win-win. So if we get $80 million total of public housing preservation, the largest amount previously was $20 million at one point in time. I think this is a way for us to go big on the public housing preservation piece.
Vice Chair Egbaje.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Representative Johnson.
All right, Chair Howard, Commissioner Hull, thank you for being here today. I have a couple of questions for you. One, first of all, how much the spreadsheet we got has had $100 million in bonding, but you were talking $150 million in bonding. So I'm just wondering what the actual number is.
Commissioner Hope.
Chair Howard and Lee Johnson, we're looking at housing infrastructure in two places. One in the appropriations budget, which is $100 million, and then also in the bonding bill, an additional $250 million in bonding.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Hope, thank you for that information. That brings up to another question that I do have. In total bonding for housing, bonding, and notes since it started, I'm just wondering if you happen to have the total number of bonds that are out right now that the state has on the books, so we have an idea what the debt is in the housing, state housing purview. Give us an idea where we are. Interest rates are extremely high right now. Economists are still talking about a possible recession coming up next year. So I want to make sure where our debt is so the state keeps their, I believe we have a AAA rating.
Commissioner Hope.
Chair Howard and Lee Johnson, I think I want to make sure I'm clear about your question. Is the question of previous authorizations for housing infrastructure bonds, how much of it have we not yet attached to projects, or what is the total amount of housing infrastructure bonds that we have issued, and is it a debt service question?
Representative Johnson.
Chair Howard, Commissioner Howard, it's the debt question. How much do we owe? How many bonds have we let? How many have we paid off? What is our current debt in housing, dealing with housing, not just in the housing bonds, but also the housing bonds dealing the geo bonds dealing with housing.
Commissioner Hope.
Chair Howard and Lee Johnson, first and probably most importantly is that we didn't get housing infrastructure bonds last year, so we did not issue them last year in this higher interest rate environment. So we were able to take advantage in the past of kind of a historically suppressed interest rate environment. We do get preferred pricing in our housing infrastructure bond issuances, and I just always think about the cost of doing nothing. I think what we see in greater Minnesota communities, I have employers tell me that the cost of not doing housing is meaning that they're thinking about putting the next group of jobs in another state. I think about a kid who doesn't have stable housing and the cost of doing nothing for the school. So we could certainly follow up with you on the debt service numbers. I don't have those in my materials today, but we can follow up on that.
Representative Johnson.
Commissioner, or Chair Howard, Commissioner, I'm just looking at that. Forgot to bring that statute with me, but I believe the reports were due to this committee and to the legislature within 2 weeks. I believe it was with that information. I believe it was either January 15th or February 15th. That report by statute is due to this committee, so hopefully we'll have that soon. We also, you talked about the housing trust fund. That piqued my interest. As the deacon in my church, I'm the one who's responsible for people asking for requests for assistance. And one of the biggest things that we hear is for assistance in rent. On your slideshow, you had 39 organizations that help out that get grants from your office to do this. There's 87 counties in this state. I'm just wondering if we can get a list of those organizations so when I have these people come in, I can find out where to send them to get the information. And it's information that all legislators should have because they do get calls on that as well. Mm-hmm. But my concern with only 39, I have a feeling that probably 50 to 60% of them are in two counties. What's happened to the other counties? Are they being left out?
Commissioner Hall? Oh, sorry.
If we can get that information, if you can get that information to me, I would really appreciate it.
Your response, sir, Commissioner Hall?
Yes, Chair Howard and Lee Johnson. I just want to make sure that I am distinguishing between two different things. The Housing Trust Fund was created to do rental assistance on an ongoing basis, kind of like having a HUD Housing Choice Voucher. That is a program that the agency has not added new funding to for quite some time. And therefore, the people who have the rental vouchers have the rental vouchers, and there hasn't been an opportunity for a large expansion. So referring somebody to the entities that got those grants a long time ago wouldn't be a helpful path for the families that are presenting at your church. The Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program is really able to do emergency assistance for families who have a housing need, both in terms of helping them with if they're behind on their rent, but it also can help them going forward a bit to get them back in a good place to be able to pay their rent. So I think what would be more helpful to you, I'm happy to provide both, but I think what would be more helpful to you is a list of our network of family homeless prevention and assistance providers. And that is also where we're proposing to do a pretty significant infusion of one-time money, recognizing that emergency assistance is something that people need once. But if you actually have a rental assistance voucher for your unit, that's an ongoing cost.
Anything else, Representative Johnson?
Chair Howard, Commissioner Hall, I want to thank you for that. I would like that information because I know a number of people, even at working at the county level, when they've gone in to help out. In my community, there's nothing. And we ended up having people being thrown out on the streets because we have no place to get the assistance, yet you have the programs, but they're not available in my county. And it's not available in quite a few areas across greater Minnesota. So we need to take a good look at that, where they're going and where this money is actually going. And I just have one last thing is, I believe Representative Petersburg hit on it. Representative Nash touched on it a little bit. But high housing costs is actually a symptom of the problem. We need to find out what is the cause. Representative Petersburg brought up that a lot of times a lot of the programs we're doing, we're just shifting the cost and increasing the problem. We need to dig in to find out what is causing the high cost of housing. When a house in Woodbury or in Lino Lakes costs Lake Elmo costs almost $50,000 more to build than 6 miles away across the river. I think we have a problem that this committee needs to dig into and find out what's causing that. If it's zoning issues that are causing redlining, we really need to dig into that, because that can really drive up the cost of a home and keep affordable housing out of the communities. So, and with what I see in this budget proposal, unfortunately, there's nothing to deal with that. So we really need to start digging into what's causing the problem instead of just dealing with the symptoms. And with that, I'll turn it over to you, Chair Howard.
Thanks, Representative Johnson. Are there any members with questions? Commissioner Ho.
Chair Howard, I just wanted to come back to the first point. The Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Network is a statewide network, and it should have statewide coverage. The problem is that sometimes it runs out of money. And so this is why we're proposing an infusion into the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program.
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Howard and Commissioner Ho. Great to see you again. Question about the Family Homeless Prevention. Appreciate you teasing out and delineating what the funds are eligible, or the difference between the Housing Trust Fund and this program. Would you be able to give us a reminder of what are the eligible expenses in the Family Homelessness Prevention? Is utilities or transportation, for example, covered in there? And then second part of that is, I know how important these funds were in Greater Minnesota for preventing homelessness for renters, but also how important like Home Help Minnesota is. And I know that's not in this presentation, but can you just give us a status of where Home Help is and what you see in this budget, or might be a gap for homeowners who own their home but need some assistance in the mortgage front?
Commissioner Hope.
Chair Howard and Representative Kozlowski, thanks for the opportunity to do my public service announcement on Home Help MN. But let me first say, I will send you a list of the eligible expenses under the Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance Program, but it also pays for the navigators, the people that just help people through that, as well as getting caught up on things you're behind on and what you need to get established. Home Help MN is the state's COVID-19 American Rescue Plan funded homeowners assistance fund. It's available to homeowners in Minnesota who have fallen behind on any of their home ownership related expenses. We still have funds available. I thought we'd see a deluge of applications. We didn't. So we still have funds available. So the most important thing is, if you know a homeowner who's behind, they can go to homehelpmn.org and find out how to request an application. And they should be working with their mortgage servicer in that process as well. We've been able to prevent a fair number of share sales and foreclosures with that program, but we still have funds available.
And Commissioner, I actually just had one follow-up on FHPAP and rental assistance. As you kind of mentioned in your presentation, we've seen a steady rise of evictions and a big need that still exists for folks that are falling behind on rent. As you know, as Representative Johnson mentioned, that's something that's happening all across the state. And it does seem like FHPAP is a pretty flexible tool that is available throughout the state. With the need present, is it a correct assumption that the sooner the legislature were to pass some of those resources that's in the governor's budget, the sooner that those dollars could be potentially utilized for Minnesotans that are falling behind?
Thank you, Chair Howard. We are beginning just a regular funding cycle for our Family Homeless Prevention Assistance Program, and we of course would be modeling it off of the current base. So if we were to find out that we were going to get additional Family Homeless Prevention Assistance for this biennium, we could do it in a timely way to embed it into this RFP, we could get money out earlier in the biennium than if we don't find out until May. And I've also heard of the possibility of an early bonding bill. The public housing preservation geo bonds are a separate RFP for the organization, since it's just available to public housing. We could initiate that RFP cycle earlier if we saw public housing preservation dollars earlier. I mean, all of this is money that as long as it's tied to the next biennium, it has a July 1st earliest possible start date. Of course, for new things, it's harder to get them started, you know, between the end of May and that quickly. So, but where we're putting money into things that have existing pipes, we could do any of that faster. I'm not sure. I think Family Homeless Prevention and Assistance and POP are probably the two where we have the potential to have the highest impact by going sooner.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you for going a little over on time. Really appreciate your presentation, the governor's budget, and I think there's a lot of opportunity ahead for us to partner and work together on these important issues.
Thank you, Chair Howard, and members of the committee. I appreciated the discussion as well. Thank you.
We do have a bill hearing on House File 302, and just some housekeeping. Due to a backup at the revisers, we haven't processed the committee report from capital investment, so the bill isn't technically in our possession. Our plan was to lay this bill over, so we are still going to proceed with an informational hearing and cover some of the items that we didn't cover in that joint hearing with 302. And with that, I will go up to present, because this is my bill, and turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Igbaji.
Thank you, Chair Howard. As you are ready, please present House File 302.
Members, again, this is House File 302, which is the proposal we discussed at our joint capital investment hearing that at this juncture provides $750 million in housing infrastructure bonds, providing an influx in resources that we need to meet this housing crisis. And the housing infrastructure bonds, as we discussed, is a flexible tool to address the needs of deeply affordable housing all the way up to home ownership. It's a flexible tool that will mean a home for literally thousands of Minnesotans that don't have one currently. Again, we have a 100,000 unit gap in terms of deeply affordable housing. We have some of the worst racial gaps in home ownership, and providing this level of housing infrastructure bonds is a way for Minnesota to, as the commissioner mentioned, make sure that we get this pipeline moving with some dependability going forward to finally, in a significant way, meet our affordable housing crisis. There are also policy changes in this bill, some that the commissioner addressed, one that would expand the eligibility up to 50% of AMI. We believe this is important to meet a need of housing that is not currently being addressed or built in a significant way. And we're also taking steps to build more accessible affordable housing, which is an important issue. And boy, if we have a general housing crisis, we have a crushing crisis in terms of access to accessible affordable housing. And we'll hear some testimony about that today. And so I think I'll stop there because I want to give time to our testifiers. And we'll turn it over to my first testifier here, Ms. Block.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair Igbaji, members of the committee. My name is Kelly Lotz. Nice to see all of you again. And thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm a policy and field building advisor with MCCD, and we are an organization that represents 50 affordable housing and economic development nonprofits across the metro area that serve all of Minnesota. With our members in the Homes for All Coalition, we are here to seek your support for House File 302 and the request for $1 billion in bonds for housing this session. An investment of this size would be transformative in ensuring that every Minnesotan has an affordable and stable place to call home. In addition to the budget request, as Chair Howard mentioned, we ask you to support four key policy changes that will help ensure housing infrastructure bonds function more effectively to keep Minnesotans housed. Without any HIVs passed in the previous session, as has been mentioned today, there's been a distinct lack of funding for the development and preservation of affordable housing. To address this, HF 302 would authorize half of the HIVs for use in 2023 and half for use in 2024. This would create a more stable pipeline of funding for housing and would lend some much needed stability to the creation of housing. To better understand just how many affordable housing projects are currently waiting in the pipeline, we conducted an affordable housing pipeline survey where we found that our members alone have more than 2,360 units of multifamily housing, 350 units of homeownership, and 935 units of housing co-ops that are ready for development. It can take years to put together a project from idea to actual development, and any funding disruption can cause a project to fail. It is the system that affordable housing developers operate on now, and the more stability, the better, until we can implement wider systemic changes. In partnership with the ARC Minnesota and many disability advocacy organizations who signed a letter of support, we ask you to support a change to ensure that people with disabilities have housing that is both affordable and accessible to them. The term accessible when describing housing is not consistent, and often housing units described as accessible have features that are inaccessible for people with disabilities. Minnesota housing requires 5% of units in buildings with four or more units to be accessible. However, this bill would improve the level of accessibility to also include a roll-in shower, which is currently only optional. It will also improve accessibility by including 5% sensory accessible units. HF302 would also specifically finance the costs of acquisition, rehabilitation, adaptive reuse, and new construction of single-family and manufactured home parks through the use of grants. I think Commissioner Ho already touched on this, but we've heard from our members that Minnesota Housing has primarily used loans to fund homeownership, which has presented some challenges, so we want to specifically include that homeownership should be funded through grants. Finally, HF302 would authorize a new eligible use to include the development and preservation of housing at 50% AMI and under without supportive services. Pre-pandemic, 56% of unhoused people cited lack of affordable housing as the cause for their experience with homelessness. In order to get deeply affordable supportive housing now, people often have to go through the traumatic experience of being unhoused first. By authorizing this change, we can help stabilize thousands of Minnesotans and prevent our state's lowest wealth families from experiencing homelessness. By passing House File 302, implementing these policy changes, and securing $1 billion in bonds for housing this session, we can begin to address the lack of affordable housing across the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Chair Howard, for carrying this important bill and for all of your work that you've done on behalf of housing. And thank you, members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you. We have a couple more testifiers on the list. Is Judy Moe? Welcome to the committee. As you get settled, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Judy Moe, M-O-E. Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. Thank you for allowing me to come speak to you today. My name is Judy Moe, as I said, and I'm the director of the Richfield Disability Advocacy Partnership. I also serve on the Minnesota Council on Disability. And in the past, I served on the Olmsted Accessible Housing Work Group. But today, I am coming to talk to you as a mom of a daughter who uses a wheelchair and the need for accessible, affordable housing. In 2019, my daughter Raven and I lost our housing and were not able to find new housing because so little accessible housing exists. Two of the months we were homeless, we stayed at an extended stay hotel where we met a man who had lived there for 9 months. He told us that he also was not able to find accessible, affordable housing. The interesting thing about hotels is that the Americans with Disabilities Act requires, for example, that a certain percentage of hotel rooms have roll-in showers if the hotel has 51 or more units. There is currently no requirement by state or federal law that any percentage of housing units have roll-in showers. Currently, people with disabilities who are capable of living independently are being forced to live in group homes and nursing homes, or worse, becoming and staying homeless for years before, if ever, finding housing. I call this the crisis that no one is talking about. And this bill is just the first step in addressing this ongoing crisis in Minnesota. When HousingLink.com did their survey in 2018, they found that there were 1.3 million searches for housing in Minnesota using their search tool. And according to that survey, 44% of those who performed a housing search had one or more disabilities. In that same year, only 24% of the vacancies posted on their website featured one or more accessible features. And for renters who were not successful in their housing search, 53% reported the reason as not enough accessible rental units, and 80% reported not enough accessible rental units that were also affordable. The demand for accessible housing has never been greater. Today, you have a chance to move House File 302 forward and let the disability community know that we are not invisible and that you see us and intend to make accessible housing a priority. Thanks again for allowing me to speak to you today, and I'm happy to answer any of the questions you have.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier we have on our list is Justin Smith. Welcome to the committee, and as you're ready, please state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Justin Smith, and I live in Roseville. I am here in support of House File 302, which includes a policy change that would ensure that when using state dollars, such as housing infrastructure bonds to build housing, that we are building housing that works for everyone, including people with disabilities. I'm a young man in my 20s, use a wheelchair to move around, and my communication device to help me speak. Over 2 years ago, I started a quest to find a wheelchair accessible apartment so I could move out of my parents' house and live on my own. Let me share my experience. First, I learned there is simply a lack of accessible and affordable housing. Of the over 5,000 current Ramsey County apartment vacancies, there are currently two apartments that might work for someone using a wheelchair, is low income, and not 55 plus, because if I wanted 55 plus, I'd just keep living with my parents. From looking at the floor plans, neither would work for me. My best chance of finding an apartment was looking at brand new developments. I quickly discovered there are no consistent criteria for what qualifies as wheelchair accessible. As part of my search, I toured a new 98-unit building that had one studio and one bedroom they considered wheelchair accessible. 2%. Wow. Both units had bathtubs instead of roll-in showers needed by many wheelchair users or those using walkers. I may be able to get into a building, ride in an elevator, and enter an apartment, but wouldn't actually be able to live there. Here's the thing. I do not want to live in a group home or segregated apartment building where everyone has a disability. I use self-directed services so I can choose my own support staff. And I want to be part of an inclusive community with people of all ages, abilities, and backgrounds. I eventually lucked out and found a place just being built that had an apartment with a roll-in shower. The apartment is not ideal, but it's workable, and I've lived there for just over a year. It's important to know, the only reason I am in my apartment today is because I was lucky enough to talk to the right person at the right time, and I had savings in my ABLE account that helped me pay my rent this past year. I'm able to remain in my apartment because I just got a Section 8 housing voucher. We need the state to ensure that people have the same opportunities and access to living in their own homes as any other setting. And we need to design for accessibility from the start. If we're not building more accessible apartments that actually work for people with disabilities, that are integrated and included in our community, where do we live? This policy change will help move us towards building an inclusive Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list, we have Mary Jo McGuire. Welcome to the committee. Commissioner McGuire, please state your name for the record when you're ready and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm Mary Jo McGuire, MC, capital G-U-I-R-E. It's great to be here, and thank you so much for all of your work. Some of you may know that I served 14 years in the House and know the hard work that you do and appreciate it all, and I love that you have this very robust housing committee. We had it blended in with other committees back in my day, and it's just so important. As you'll hear in my testimony, housing is one of the most important things that we do at counties. I am currently a Ramsey County Commissioner, and I'm also president of the Association of Minnesota Counties, which is an association that includes all 87 counties in the entire state of Minnesota. And we are very united in our gratitude for this bill that you're carrying, Mr. Chair, and in our need for housing. So on behalf of AMC, I want to voice our strong support for House File 3302, which provides this historic investment in housing infrastructure bonds. While housing issues weren't always synonymous with county priorities, we can say that has changed over the course of these last few years. I know when I first got elected to county government 10 years ago, I said, what are we doing about housing? And they said, well, we don't do a lot. But that has really changed, and thank you for that, and thank you for helping us be a vehicle for these changes in housing. It's very crucial that we are partners with you in this. Our members voiced significant concerns regarding the lack of affordable housing, housing options, and homelessness. This is throughout the state. County commissioners across our state agree that stable housing is and has been a foundation to a healthy community. These realities have correlated to more and more counties investing in housing support resources and advocating for state investments and policy changes. Housing infrastructure bonds are an important tool to construct deeply affordable housing and help reduce our state's housing shortage. Many counties have benefited from housing infrastructure bonds, which have allowed for new and much-needed housing development projects to ensure that Minnesotans have stable and affordable housing. In Ramsey County, housing infrastructure bond funding has assisted 8 projects in the last 5 years. This has created hundreds of units for seniors, formerly homeless adults, and families. Ramsey County has been able to leverage HIBs with local American Rescue Plan dollars and HUD dollars to bring projects to construction. We have seen nonprofit developers utilize HIBs for senior housing, and HIB funds have also preserved and rehabbed units for our hardest to serve populations throughout the county. We have shovel-ready projects that will serve formerly homeless residents but cannot be completed without these funds. In Olmsted County, the HRA partnered with a number of entities on an HIB project to house families experiencing homelessness and people with serious and persistent mental illnesses. In this last year, the Olmsted HRA also applied for an HIB last year to fund a 36-unit affordable senior housing building for 30% AMI seniors. We strongly support the addition of public housing rehabilitation in this bill. In Hubbard County, which is in north central Minnesota, the HRA purchased a low-income housing tax credit property in 2017 to preserve it as an affordable property. The building is now over 30 years old and in need of a new furnace, windows, and fixture updates. The funding in the bill will provide a source for these renovations and will allow the units to remain affordable. Counties deal with housing issues on a wide spectrum. Our county employees in human services, workforce development, public health, or community corrections can attest to the fact that access to stable housing affects an individual's physical health, mental health, safety, and economic stability. It is a social determinant of health and well-being, as we all know. We strongly support this bill And thank you again, Chair Howard, for authoring it as well as for your leadership in this area. It will truly have a transformative effect on the available housing supply in our state for years to come. Thank you so much, Madam Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. I've also got here Gina Fortney, who is with the Association of Minnesota Counties, to help with that. But just thanks again for all of your service to your communities and for your work on this very important issue.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Members, we only have about 5 extra minutes before we have a hard stop, so I'll quickly scan if there's any public testimony really quickly. Not seeing any member discussion. Representative Perez-Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just want to say thank you to Justin Smith for giving your amazing testimony. It is so important as someone who has family members and friends with disabilities in need of accessibility towards better housing. It's really great to see the advocacy. You're a hero, man. Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Chair, too. Since this is going to be laid over, is it possible for us to have maybe some additional 10 minutes at the next meeting or something to ask more questions? Would that be possible?
Representative Howard.
Representative Peters, yes. This is definitely not the last time we talk about this.
Thank you. Any other member questions or discussion? Any last closing comments, Representative Howard? Last minute or two?
Vice Chair Gbaje, I just want to also thank my testifiers, both Justin and Judy, and mention not only were they here to testify, they've been involved in the development of this policy, important policy, and they've been involved in advocacy at the local level that they've brought here to the state level. And so we can learn a lot, and this legislation is part of that learning process. And I look forward to more discussion on this bill, on this proposal, as we go forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair Howard. Members, the next hearing will be Tuesday, February 7th. We'll have several bills that day, including the Bring It Home bill. Then February 8th will be a day centered around manufactured housing. So thank you, everyone. And with that, we are adjourned.